Welcome to the Creative Entrepreneur Show. Hey, Brian, what are your topics this week?
Hey, Rash, I'm going to talk about what being a creative entrepreneur means to me and what we do as a social media company when new platforms like Threads start to explode and how we react to it.
Great. And I know you have a question coming at me after that, and I have one for you. I'm going to talk about AI, basically an extension of the last show. And then, of course, I'm going to get into Google Analytics, which actually my topic of AI is a good segue into just talking about what's going on here. We, as you may know, if you listened to the last show, you might have noticed a gap. You might have noticed, well, about a year and a half gap, where I was sharing what is coming and AI and how I could literally just have an AI write a sentence and then say it in my voice as an intro. Well, that's a year and a half ago, and a lot has happened. And many of you may have been scratching your head, how does this affect me? Well, guess what? It's affecting you now. As you know, Brian, we're talking ChatGPT all day long, every day. We're seeing new creative everything exploding. It's just amazing. But we have something that is not AI, but really important to the show, and that is Brian. He's new to the show, and I think part of that lapse was accountability, lack of accountability on my part. As many of you know, I've been podcasting since 1999. That was my first show, and it was a creative business is what it was called, and then we did Prosperous Artists, and then I started this show in 2008. And it was New Media Photographer that eventually turned into the Creative Entrepreneur Podcast. And we used to, there are a few other names along the way, but we've gotten up to 485 with this podcast. And I you know, we did a lot of good work when it was, you know, there every week for you for 5 years straight. And so, you know, I can't guarantee 5 years straight, but I think a little accountability and having another voice on the show is really important and will make it more dynamic rather than just my rants. And so, with that, I want Brian Scott to share a little bit about himself and what he's bringing to the table as a creative entrepreneur.
Absolutely, Rosh. Yeah, thank you. First of all, I'm honored to be here. I'm very excited. And yeah, I'm definitely signing up to be your accountability coach. I'm looking forward to it. It's something that we're going to, you know, set aside every week and make sure that we're sharp with our information and that we want to be able to bring our unique perspectives in this, you know, digital creative world to the masses. Little background on me. I co-own Great Scott Social Media. My wife formed the company almost 10 years ago, and a lot has changed. And it's a fun, dynamic industry, and it allows us to be truly creative entrepreneurs in a few different levels. You know, when I did a little research on exactly what a creative entrepreneur is, a lot of the typical things you'd think of, you know, your musicians, your artists, those are what they classify as a creative entrepreneur. But I want to take a step back and say that, you know,
can I interject something here? I know I raised my hand and just jumped in here. But if people can't, in this situation, can't see you like I see you, eventually we're looking at video, but there is a bunch of guitars behind you because you are a creative. I just want to make it very clear. You are a creative entrepreneur. Yes, social media, you understand this world, but you know, I'm counting nine plus guitars, meaning you are a musician, you are a creative. And I just want that to be really clear in the process.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I think I hide a little more. I hide behind the quantity of guitars on the wall. But I think those are more representative of my interest in it rather than my talents. But I certainly try my absolute best. I am in a band. And I provide, you know, part of the songwriting process, and I fit my part well. The creativity, the ability to work with my bandmates and create is really what drives me. And it keeps my day moving, it's nice to be able to then extrapolate that and put it into my professional world and allow that creative brain to expand our business.
Very good. So, hey, get into that first topic a little bit about, you know, creative entrepreneurship. I think that's a great topic.
So, yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's what I've discovered in, you know, helping expand this business with my wife is that we couldn't do it all. And we had to, we very much had to be creative in the ways that we expanded. And, you know, when we went into hiring our first employee a few years ago, we've now expanded into 12 employees. And we've had to be very outside of the box when it comes to our solutions for this. And, you know, there is no answer. There's no defined answer to running a social media company. So, you know, some of the things that are great about running a social media company is research and development is very easy, because all the other companies that you aspire to be like, if you think about your big marketing, your Nike, your Apple, your McDonald's, they're posting and putting stuff up all the time. So we're able to see and be creative and learn in real time, you know, what the big money people are doing. And, you know, and that's a way that I feel that we've really had to be creative and design an outside of the box business model to make this work. And Rosh, I know we've been working together. We've, you know, shared some clients, and you've been able to see, you know, the expansion and the growth of my company throughout the years. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely. It's been impressive.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, again, you know, this is going to be just the next step in that process of getting some of that information that I've been harvesting. And I've been doing this now since 2017. So I'm just past my 6-year anniversary of doing this. So very excited to take all this knowledge that I've kind of harvested over time and get it out to the people.
Yeah. Help creative entrepreneurs. And, you know, I was sitting here thinking about who is our audience. And, you know, I think certainly marketers and social media people will clue into this show, but our main target in this process is probably that creative, scared or curious or, you know, driven creative person. And all three could be the same person. And when I mean scared, I mean, it's kind of going into my first topic is AI and how it is just everywhere already, it seems like, but you know what? It isn't everywhere yet, but it will be soon. As I think I said about 6 months ago, 7 months ago, after ChatGPT came out, I said, this is it. This is where you'll find AI in your toaster before you know it.
The first day of the rest of your lives, right?
Exactly. It's here. It's out of the box. And you know, I was creating AI websites, just connecting to OpenAI, as you know, just mm-hmm. not long after that. I said, let me see how easy this is to just make something. And I literally made a full-on AI website in 45 minutes. Yes, I have some of the technical know-how, but it was not that hard. And if I can do it, you know, it's going to be in your toaster before you know it. And that's what we're going to see. And so coming back to that fear, the creative entrepreneur fear and overwhelm, quite honestly, and I get this stuff. And quite honestly, this happened to me the other day. I was sitting there looking at the new options with ChatGPT that allow you to now just pull in the code interpreter that allows you to take a set of data and just upload it to ChatGPT. This is in the beta. All you have to turn it on. It doesn't take much to turn it on. And it'll literally crunch all that data and tell you what it's about.
Wow.
And it's almost like data scientists are, you know, just like anybody. Everyone feels like they are out of a job. But again, the ease of doing that allows the data scientist to be more creative and to understand and maybe to do more data. And it's the same with the creative entrepreneur. I went to DALL-E before the show today, and I just put in cat. And guess what it gave me? A cat. An average, not an exciting, not a real interesting, just a basic, everyday, boring photo of a cat.
Okay.
I emphasize boring. It would take creative ideas to make it a very interesting image from the creator. So it's learning how to prompt. You'll hear the words prompt engineering. Let me give you one more example of understanding where I'm going with this. And this is a very Seth Godin-ish. We talked about Seth Godin the other day, how average is everywhere. You know, ChatGPT is really just, you know, when you type in Google and it just extends, you know, your sentence, it's just that on steroids. It is looking for the highest probability word that comes afterwards. Mm-hmm. And yes, it will get better at some level, but it'll need prompting. Otherwise, it's going to give you a really nice average piece of work, an average sentence, because it's giving you the most high probability. If I said, hello, how are, next word would be high probability be you versus, you know, green frog, you know, that would be how our green frog would not be high on that list. So the point being is that much of what is created initially from all of the AI is average. The creativity is still going to depend on you. And I'm going to throw it to you for your next thing, but I do have one more thing I want to share, is that it does allow you to extend your ability. It's going to be kind of extending the brain a little bit. You can do things that you couldn't do before, things that you thought, hey, I would like to try. Well, you know what? I'm not going to try this. It's going to take me 2 weeks to figure it out. Now it doesn't. It's just now. So it extends the, just like when digital photography switched, a lot of analog photographers quit because it lowered the barrier to digital photography, which allowed me, a photojournalist at the time, to do higher end photography. Yep, absolutely. But those who took things to another level. So it's going to allow you as a creative entrepreneur to go to another level. Yes, there's going to be some scary stuff. Yes, it's going to take stuff away. What are your thoughts? I mean, you're nodding your head, and I think you have a lot to add to this too. Just this whole idea of what AI is going to do for us and, you know, even working against us.
Yeah, I've been really, since you showed it to me, it was back in November, right after it came out, and immediately saw the potential with it and adopted it into our business, you know, as a creative entrepreneur should, right away. And, you know, the way I like to talk in analogies when it comes to something like this, that I feel, you know, some people have been a little hyperbolic in saying that, like, oh, this is going to be as big as electricity. This is as big as the car. But yeah, that's what I explain to people, is we're going from riding a skateboard to hopping in a Ferrari in terms of the potential capability of what something like this could do. So, I've used it for creative purposes. I've used it for ideas. But again, you need to then have that human brain in it, to where you've got to decipher some of this information. And like you were saying, Raj, with the prompt, I think the next revolution is the power of the question.
Yes.
And that's learning what questions to ask. And the fact that this isn't a one-way prompt like it is with Google, where you ask a question and then you move on to the next topic. You are actually training your AI. You know, I think How to Train Your Dragon, How to Train Your AI is one of those next things, because it's back and forth. It's a conversation. You can ask it why it answered the way it did. I was in the middle of writing a song. I had a full verse written out, chord progression, everything. I uploaded it into ChatGPT. I said, write me a chorus in the style of Pink Floyd. And it came back, it was okay. And, you know, nothing that I was going to take and, you know, publish or anything like that. But then what really blew my mind is I said, why did you choose those chords? Why did you choose those words? And the answers that it gave, Raj, were mind blowing, that they were,
really?
They were correct in music theory. They had researched, they understood the ideology of Pink Floyd. It went a few layers deep that would take some true, you know, human thinking to get that far. So,
impressive.
You know, like you said, you just typed in a picture of a cat, or you typed in a prompt for a cat and you got a boring cat. But if you ask it the question, okay, now make this cat a superhero flying on a unicorn, you know, and it's all the power of the question that you get. So, you know, I do believe there's a little validity to these, you know, some of these artists that are creating art on AI, where, you know, the hardcore artists are, you know, sticking their heels in saying, that's not art. That's not, this or that, but there's a conversation to be had there. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that art in general, I go, because as a photographer, I've always had that, you know, photography is not an art, it's a mechanical process, you know, and then, you know, now we get into Photoshop and then we get into all these things. And I say, okay, I've always said, and that art is about the decisions you make. And if asking questions are part of the decision-making process, you know, some of it can be random, but so is throwing paint on a canvas, which can be real art. I mean, drawing a line through the middle of a canvas can be real art. We have one of those at the DIA right now, you know, and it was about the decisions that artists made, the size of the canvas. It's huge. The color, the brush that was used. There are a lot of questions and answers made by that artist in the process. You can always have the conversation. Is it good art?
Right.
You know,
some people love that can of Campbell's soup.
Yeah.
I don't.
There you go. Yeah. You know, I believe that you can call anything you want to declare art, art. You can always have the conversation. Is it good art? And that's always a fair conversation because there's plenty of opinions. And so if creating or support by AI is, you know, part of the process, that was your choice to apply AI. It was your choice to apply the options AI gave you. It was your choice to ask specific questions. Right. And I think ultimately that's what we're going to be doing. It's the don't be a victim of all this. Be the person and learn how to ask the questions and control it. I think, and I want your opinion on this too. I think a lot of times we see something like this and say it's going to take over everything. But look, again, digital photography example. But the computer, people didn't know what to do with the computer when it first came out. They were like, well, maybe we can put our recipes on it. We don't know. But once you had a problem that it solved, then you applied it.
Right.
And the thing is, the same can be with AI. Look, Photoshop's available to everyone, but not everybody does great photos. Camera, you know, you have a camera in every phone, doesn't make all your photos great either. There are a lot of horrible, horrible photos being taken. There are some enhancements, and some people take the time to dive in deep to learn what those tools are in their phone because it's more accessible. So we have more opportunities, but still there are more photographers than ever and more photography opportunities than ever. And I think this is going to make more opportunities if you ask the right questions and apply it. Just because it's available to everyone doesn't mean they're going to use it. And they're going to depend. I thought of this one on the way here, is that, you know, you could probably ask an AI how to, you know, build a house and all the details and everything. But, you know, you probably don't want to deal with all that. You probably still want to go to a contractor and have them maybe take your ideas that you got from the AI because these you like this, but then have another architect look and make sure it's sound, confirm everything, double check the work. You're still going to want those people. And so you still need to be that expert. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's natural, it's human nature to be scared of the unknown. I mean, I know we all grew up watching Terminator and The Matrix, and you know, we've seen in iRobot how this could go poorly. But I like to kind of keep my deep-rooted faith in the, you know, human nature that we're gonna, our own instincts for self-preservation are gonna prevail. And that we will, you know, we'll guide this tool as we go. You know, people were first scared of cars because you're moving faster than you are, you know, on a bike. So there's danger involved. And, but then there's regulations. There's, you know, the different things that come in. So, you know, I've talked to some people who say, hey, let's enjoy the next 15 years and then it's all over. Or I've talked to other people who are like, hey, this is going to help us get to Mars. This is going to help, you know, us become interstellar someday. And I'm an optimist. I prefer to stay on the positive side of it. But I also, you know, I understand the concept of, you know your enemy, know what's going on and be a part of it, be an early adopter instead of letting it catch up with you.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to your next topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, right now, Threads is exploding. It's been a big week. It's in the tens of millions of downloads at this point. Meta really, when they do something, Meta tends to do it right. That's my personal opinion on it. I mean, I know that opinion varies. But as a social media managing company, what do we do when a new platform like this explodes? And at this point, we learn. We're in a learning and observing phase. You know, we've had some clients start to reach out, you know, ask some questions on it. You know, from the research I've done at this point, there's no ads yet on Threads, but we know that's going to change. Yeah. I'm really trying to research the differentiation between it and Twitter. And truth be told, Rosh, Twitter is not my bread and butter when it comes to social media management. Many of my clients and the kind of companies we manage, it's that Facebook, Instagram, and now we're getting into TikTok or we're getting into LinkedIn, you know, depending on if they're a business to business. But Twitter, you know, in my just observation, especially in the past couple of years, has become a place for public figures and a place for, you know, live action discourse, but not necessarily where our bread and butter has lived. So I'm watching it closely. You know, we're definitely going to sign up for it. But, you know, what have you seen on your end, Rosh, with Threads?
So, you know, most of the people that went over there were from Instagram. Mm-hmm. I don't think there were a lot. And it's going to kind of, you know, I'm going to jump ahead on our questions, because this is totally related.
Oh, cool.
So at the end, we decided we're going to ask each other a question. And I'm going to jump in early because you probably have seen these, you know, how quick different platforms got to a million, you know, and like Netflix, 3.5 years, Twitter, 2 years, Facebook, 10 months, Spotify, 5 months, Instagram, 2.5 months, ChatGPT, 5 days. Threads 1 hour. But where did that all come from? I would say the ChatGPT in 5 days was much more impressive than the Threads in 1 hour, because basically it's Facebook or Instagram saying, hey, look, download, click this here. You're already here. Yeah. You know, millions and millions and millions of people. Just click here. Now you're part of it versus a chat what? You know, and in 5 days, a million people.
Easy to say still, yeah.
Yeah. As I think you pointed out, they needed a better branding. But so the point being, you know, Threads just looks like a Instagram, Facebook, Twitter to me. It's not as customizable. It is very basic. I see, for me, in the old days of social media, you know, when Twitter came out, I jumped on, I think it was 2006.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm talking with, you know, it was just being able to connect with people in a way that we could never really connect before. And I eventually termed it the people's AP wire. And I still think of it that way. But you know, it's been the new ownership hasn't quite made some good choices with it. I mean, I felt very validated when I got my blue check mark. I really did, you know, as an author and the whole thing. And now, you can have it back, but you got to pay me $8 a month. I mean, it just, that thing, how many people did that just say, okay, you know, and the type of stuff you see on there. So I'm with you with Twitter's not what it once was, but you know, back then, here's a couple of good examples. You know, I would connect with people that are very well known today in the social media world. You know, you get the Chris Brogans, you get these are old school folks, early days. You know, Mitch Joel, and we would be back and forth, and as long as some other friends and other photography friends, I made it. You know, I spoke in New York because of a connection I made on Twitter. You know, the first time I saw it, because of a connection I made, turned out to be like the top stock photography person in the world at the time who wanted to learn about social media. And we connected and he invited me to New York and we spoke and all that developed. I remember when I taught a social media class at the local university and one of the people was talking about one of the main books of the time that was really hot. And I tweeted the author. And during that class, and the author responded, give him $5 for a good review. That kind of stuff doesn't seem to happen today
right
on Twitter. It's not that Yeah. You know, yeah. So I'm just seeing that this kind of flipped over to Facebook in a way that still doesn't have that same vibe, that early bare bones, real connections vibe.
Well, yeah, it was revolutionary to be watching a TV show and be live tweeting with other people who are, you know, could be halfway across the country or the world watching that, you know, show at the same time or experiencing something, you know, a sports event at the same time. So there definitely was that initial sense of community. And, you know, I've of the initial stuff that I've read about Threads, that's back to a degree, but I've heard of people connecting with, you know, the people that they, you know, maybe have been their admirers. They followed them for years and now they followed them on Threads that could connect because it's, you know, the first days of it. But with it being as popular as it is, you know, you're probably not going to get that authentic experience that you got in Twitter, you know, back 15 years ago.
Yeah. But that, you know what, that just may be for any social platform now, you know, it's just not just Twitter. So we'll see. We'll see how it all goes. Is it impressive? For me personally, I don't see it that impressive. I mean, it was just, again, you know, wasn't Threads available before? Wasn't Threads a Facebook thing before? I think it was.
I've heard of it, but I know
they shut it down.
Zuckerberg really saw an opportunity. Going on with Twitter right now. I mean, they're not only are they physically trying to get in the ring together, but they're, you know, digitally.
Yeah,
too.
Right.
I think that's pretty funny to watch them duke it out in two different ways. But I feel like they you know, Facebook kind of had to, you know, they saw what happened with TikTok. And then all of a sudden, a month later, you know, Reels was all over Facebook and Instagram. And, you know, even on the algorithm side, you know, being a social media manager, seeing how they're, you know, creating the right audiences for us and with less and less input from us as social media managers, because they have improved their algorithm and, you know, are trying their best to copy the magic that TikTok came up with. So, but that's a whole nother rabbit hole. We go down that.
And we should definitely talk more about video in the future and TikTok and all that in future shows, because it still is and has been very important. See, you know, we've talked about it for so long that it's, you know, this year it's even more important. And it seems like every year it's even more important. And I think that'll continue. Yeah.
Well, going from our newest platform, I want to switch back to your second topic of, you know, the OG Google.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Google with ChatGPT, everything going on there, there's changes, you know, they got to do the, you know, what they have to do to keep up. And they've got to, you know, probably feel a little scared by people saying things like, oh, Google might be dead in 2 years because it's technology.
Yeah.
So I know with you being, you know, my forefront expert, you know, anyone has a Google related question in my world, I send them straight to you. So what's going on in the world of Google and Google Analytics and stuff?
Yeah, so Google Analytics is now official as of July. They've been warning us for quite a while. It was introduced. I did a tutorial on it like a year and a half ago or something, and I don't think it's gotten much better since then. I literally said to Google the other day, you know, if I have to use Google Tag Manager to properly do what I want to do with Google Analytics, your update failed. Because I want to be able to track what I want to track. And it's kind of like saying, you know what, here's a great, amazing update in Photoshop. Okay. So, but for it to work correctly, you're going to have to understand Illustrator. I've never liked Google Tag Manager. I liked the idea when it came out, but it was never that intuitive. I share this story a few times, and I think, and I even said this to the Google people, and they just looked at me cross-eyed, and probably rightfully so. But you know, I've taken many of their tests, you know, for Google Ads to be certified for different things. This was a number of years ago. I took the test for Google Analytics. I failed miserably. Now, I've been using Google Analytics since like it came out. Yeah. I know it very well, but what they were looking for and what I use it for were two different worlds.
Okay.
And what I see is they built a platform off of that other world. And I mean, some of it had some of the code, some of the approach, some of the privacy stuff. They had to go about this, making each element an event, make it event based. That's perfectly fine. But when I can't just very easily say, if someone lands on this page, it's a conversion.
Right. You've got to go to a whole nother tool to then install.
Properly and to do it well. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think some things are getting better. You can use some other tools that connect well. And I've seen that some people have had better luck by connecting with other conversion tools and then connect it to Google Ads. Some things just seem to don't work and don't light up the way it should. I mean, it's just there's been issue after issue. So I'm very disappointed and knew it would be disappointing when this came. And I'm sure there's a lot of very frustrated people. I guess honestly say is there are alternatives. Probably going to have to pay for them, $9, $20, $30 a month. But you're probably going to get more what you want than trying to wade through the engineer-based, you know, someone who is has a different mindset than you as a business owner, you know, offering these basic analytics. Have you had any experience with this?
No, I don't really live in that world too much. I mean, I definitely view some Google Analytics for a few of our clients. But we're you know, kind of surface level in terms of, hey, we're going to get the traffic to your site. And then it's on, you know, you and your team to see what happens once we get them there. But really, it's not the time for Google to be pushing people like you. You know, I'm not saying away from their platform, but at least away from their tools and their, you know, things, and forcing you to a third party or something like that, when, you know, they need to be doing everything they can to shore up their shores right now with, you know, the way the search engine world is going.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and back to your point in question about, you know, the world of Google and what's going to happen. Google's a big company. They're smart. They have Bard, which is not as good as the other AI, but they have better AIs. I think just like we talked about before, the AI will be, I mean, AI is already in Google. When you get certain information and answers, that's AI figuring things out anyway. A good portion of Google is AI driven as part of that algorithm. But it's going to be an assistant. So, you know, here is the information you requested, and here are the links to support information and articles. So I think it will ultimately, just to me, that seems the most logical. It's going to be a combination. And I think people are still going to want, especially for the business side. Now, and I thought about this before, it may become more and more that internet website purely is, well, it may be not, because, you know, opinion and blogging, but a lot of opinion these days is on your side of the aisle with the social media, you know, but, you know, if you want a business, if you need the plumber, the electrician, you're going to probably want to go, yes, you could ask the AI, but, you know, you could say, you'd probably be more likely to say, hey, what are five local, you know, electricians? And then you'll want to go to their website to review what is going on. I don't see that going away.
But, and their Google listing. So I call it, you know, the social proof that, you know, all clients. So it's part of, you know, why we do what we do is, yeah, when, you know, the modern day consumer, they hear about a company, they're going to check out their Google listing, they're going to check out their website, and then they're going to check out their Facebook page, typically in that order every time.
And you know, again, it takes time for people to transition. You know, people are still on Facebook. And tends to be an older crowd. But if you want to talk to your family, you need to go to Facebook.
Yeah, it's still the number one platform. It overtook TikTok again. So, I mean,
absolutely. But, you know, even on the AI side, you know, just because, kind of going back to the earlier conversation, just because people have something, like, for example, I have a Google, I have a Google Home right upstairs, and I have Alexa downstairs. Google Home probably can do a ton of stuff, a ton of information. The world is at my fingertips when I wake up in the morning. I use it for two things. Hey, Google, play Cricket Night Sounds when I'm going to sleep. And hey, Google, what time is it? I'm late. Those are the two things. Again, the world at my fingertips. And I think that kind of wraps all this around.
Right.
You know, it just because I can do anything there doesn't mean I will. And that's the same for us as creatives. People are still going to look to us and our expertise overall. And that's why I created the little, so it's not gone very far, but I thought it was a brilliant idea at the time, is the little H. I created an H with a circle around it about 2014, 15, basically saying human made. And I think there may be a little backlash to that down the road. And hey, maybe people will do that. We'll just put the little H in the circle and human made.
Yeah, I honestly think that's actually going to be a good idea going forward. I mean, we're already starting to see it with, you know, one of our clients that, you know, offers a real human experience of having a caricature drawn.
Yes.
And we're seeing a big jump in people craving that human experience in person. Human
interaction.
I have a tangible piece of paper when I'm done that has this drawing on it. So that human made, I think, you know, that's going to be a thing now that there's a competition to that. So, yeah.
Very good.
All right. Well, then to kind of wrap it up, you don't even know what question I have for you, but I think it'll be a good conclusion and kind of send us into, you know, our next episode. But why is it, Rox, that you wanted to reinvigorate the Creative Entrepreneur Podcast?
Wow. Thank you for that, Kurt. That's a good question. I think that, you know, I went to art school.
Okay.
And a lot of people asked me, are you going to go back there and teach? And I said, I will only teach one class at the art school, and it's one they don't have, and it's called business. I think a lot of creatives are very creative, but don't have the guidance they need to get their great work out there. You can be the most creative person in the world working in your basement, but if nobody knows you're there, you're not going anywhere. You don't know if you don't understand customer service, you don't know how to work the algorithms to get your work out there in social media, if you don't know how to deal with the one constant in the world, and that is change.
Yeah.
And if you don't adapt your creative life every day to what is changing, you will be obsolete. Mm-hmm. But that's your choice. And I like to offer at least a show, a place where people can come to hopefully lift that fear a little bit and give them some new ideas and some support. That's why I haven't given up on it. You know, I call it the longest running, most inconsistent podcast on the internet. And it probably is, you know,
and
we continue the tradition. Let's keep it, but let's go for a streak of a little consistency. Yeah.
No, I'm excited about this. I think this is great. I think we've, you know, both got some different opinions from, you know, similar but dissimilar industries. And, you know, to kind of follow up on why I'm joining this as well is I'm certainly a creative who, when I did work for, let's use air quotes here, the man, I was very tired of being fit in a box of this is what you have to do. These are the rules. This is the job. And then anytime I really tried to go above and beyond, it was either stifled or I was making somebody else a lot of money.
Right.
And yeah. You know, now, you know, being a creative entrepreneur, not having a box that we need to live in, we can expand in any direction. You know, I've hooked up now with an incredibly talented drone pilot who creates just unbelievable content that you wouldn't have thought of, you know, possible 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
And that's a whole new boundary. That's, you know, that's not a box that I'm in. I can go any way at all I want to go with that. So, you know, very excited to be able to bring, you know, my, you know, creative and analytical brain to, you know, to this podcast.
Very good. Well, I want to welcome, of course, Brian and everyone else joining us back once again on the Creative Entrepreneur Show and podcast. And I'm looking forward to talking to all of you and Brian. Let's talk to everyone next week.
Yep. See you next week.
Good. Excellent.
Hey, we did it.